Cool. So, Rusty with a very sore throat on the pod with Clive Chapman. Clive, how are you, mate? You're right?
I'm good, thanks, Rusty. Yourself, obviously, you're sounding a bit rough, mate.
Yeah, no. So, so I don't drink, so it's not alcohol, so we can confirm
No,
that.
you don't drink, I know that.
Actually, so how this came about probably was, I know we speak a fair bit, but I was at Mike Norman's funeral last week.
Yeah.
Mike was a dirt tracker and involved with Birmingham Solihull Rugby Club, legend of the club, legend of the game. And lots of people were telling me what a great job you were doing. So I felt compelled to A, tell you, and then B, quiz you on it. So that's how we're here today, really. So a sad day, but actually, hopefully, some good will come of it. So, do you want to kind of explain how we got to here? So, as you've described it, how you arrived where you are now.
Yeah, well, I'm born and bred in inner city Birmingham. Usual route of sort of playing football in the winter, cricket in the summer, riding my bike. Then probably through more by luck than judgment, I fluked me 11 plus and ended up at a grammar school. And on the first day, we're given these huge, heavy jerseys to put on and chucked out onto a lump of grass with H-shaped posts. And this is absolutely a true story. This is 1975. We had games masters, not games teachers, and the most scary person I've ever met in my life, and that includes 12 years military. My games master said to a nervous 11-year-old boy, "You standing between those other two fat bastards." And that was me stuck at hooker for the rest of my life. But what good came out of it was, although I didn't enjoy grammar school, it was a quite a brutal environment. I got rugby out of it, and for that I'll be ever grateful of my school experience. Then I went to juniors at Solihull Rugby Club, Sharman's Cross Road, back in the late 70s. Went to Colts, and that's the first coach's name I remember, my Colts coach at Solihull, John Sheridan. We used to train with the first team, which probably, full contact scrummaging against the first team. And from there, I went into the military, started coaching in the military. Again, I was sort of thrown into that. Chapman, you play rugby, don't you? Yeah, right, you're coaching the squadron team. So I got into coaching that way, did a few badges there. Came out of the military, and I went straight into another local club. We were playing roughly equivalent to Midlands 2 at that time, started coaching their Colts. And then I retired in 2002 playing, and I was still coaching at the time. And I can remember the, you probably sympathise with this. I remember the time I thought my time of playing was up. I was 38 years old. We just played a league game. I got home, and my little daughter, who was a toddler at the time, she stood by the fireplace. She raised her hands up to me and goes, "Daddy, pick me up." And I couldn't bend down to pick her up. So I thought, you know what, it's probably time to finish. And I stopped all rugby completely then. As I think a lot of people do, became a fan. Used to go to Welford Road a lot and go and follow England. But I started missing the club scene again, so I got back into coaching as an assistant coach at a local club. That was coaching their seniors. Did a few seasons there. We did quite well. Won a North Mids Vars, got promoted. As you know yourself, at that level, club politics plays a large part. And so, for whatever reason, that's where I met Daz Court, by the way, at that club. We both left there and went to B's at the mini and junior age group. We was asked to go and help out there with under-14s. They were struggling at the time. Followed through that age group all the way through to Colts. And you were doing the championship side there at the time, the likes of Huntie and Eugene. And all the while that was going on, I'd started coaching with North Mids age groups with Jockey. And that was quite interesting that the I can't remember who the head coach's name was, but there was a forwards coach and there was the backs coach, and that was Jockey. And he said to me, he said, "Who do you want to go and help out?" And Skian straight away said, "I'm going to the forwards." which suited me straight away, because I thought, you know what, I'll learn more as a old front row. I'll learn more actually going and working with Matt, and that was probably 2 years of the greatest coaching education I've ever had working with Matt Sherritt. We did a bit with Warriors Academy through North Mids age groups and the School of Rugby, with the likes of Gary Meacham, Andrew Stanley, I think Mike Ruddock was director of rugby at the time. And through the School of Rugby, I thought, which you probably remember that, don't you?
Yeah,
that was like the RFU idea to get kids onto the first step of the elite player pathway. It's fatally flawed, in my opinion, because of the way they did it. But I thought, do you know what? You've got players wanting to go to England, and at B's, we've got mini and junior players who want to play for the first team, which, as you were a championship team at the time, was pretty highly unlikely, to be fair. And because there's me and Skeen going around all of these coaching courses and that, and there was very few coaches doing courses at B's. You know, God love all the coaching dads, they turn up and help. But a lot of them, because they're too busy, through no fault of their own, they don't go off and do coach education courses. And so we thought, are our mini and juniors getting probably the best experience to have? So that was when we set up the APDG, which you named, if you remember, because you didn't like the original name we came up with. And that was the first time I recognised you as the agitator you are. Me and Skeef, remember, we had to sell the APDG to you and Eugene because we wanted some first team input from it. And we prepped everything. We were presenting to Eugene in the club office, and you were sat staring out the window, seemingly taking no notice. And we were going through it, and Eugene was listening and going, yeah, bro, that's cool, bro. And then you turned around and totally ambushed us with questions that we hadn't even thought of.
Apologies for looking. I would have been listening. I would have definitely been listening.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely listening by the questions you're asking. That was when I thought you're the mad professor, mate.
I'll take that.
And that got us to, we reinstated the Colts. Then you left the club, whatever year that was.
2012.
Was it really?
8 years. Right. How old are we?
Yeah. I carried on working with the seniors, me and Skeedy, with Eugene and HV. We started running the second team, or as we called it, the development squad, which was, for a team that was still semi-professional, was a massive thing to have at that club, because a lot of the mini and juniors obviously had disappeared because there's nowhere for them to play. But the IPDG did bear fruit, because there was about half a dozen mini and juniors actually got to play for Eugene's team, which was fantastic. And that was probably some of my best coaching moments, seeing those kids run out for a first team in a B shirt. It was just brilliant. You know, some of those lads now are playing at Moseley and Rotherham, and some down at London Welsh. You know, those lads have gone on to have pretty good careers, and that's, you know, even though you play a little bit of a part in it, you see them in the rugby paper of a Sunday, you think, you know what, he deserves that. And I've had a little bit of an input into that, which was great.
Yeah, you've definitely had some impact on local lads. There's a few things I want to unpick. So first, my first thing I thought was, not enough kids ride bikes these days. the second thing I thought was, did you go to the same school as Kez? the third thing I thought was, why do you think they picked you to come and do the under-14s? You think there was a reason, or were they just like, we need someone, or what was the reason?
Well, because Solihull was my old club, you know, I'd never been back to it in its Birmingham and Solihull format, but I knew it was that now. I thought, you know what, blood's thicker than water, I want to go back there. And so I think it was Daz phoned Di up, and Di says, yeah, come on down, I'm sure we can find a place for you. And we just ended up at that under-14s age group who were struggling a little bit at the time. You remember Mike Williams, great coach, but I think they just needed a little bit of direction. He was their head coach. And me and Daz hauled in there and just helped out where we could.
What type of stuff did you do to help them? How did you walk there? Can you remember back that far? I'm joking. No, I mean,
that Mike's really knowledgeable and really good coach, but I think maybe there's just a little bit of planning needed, just to sort of get things following on a little bit. And you know me as well, probably one of the first things I did was throw away the tackle shields and just get them playing games. There was a lot of drills going on, which Mike's really analytical coach, so he preferred to coach that way, which is fine. You need, as you call it, block practice to, you know, nail down a bit of technique. But I think, especially with mini and juniors, probably games are the way to go. Well, I do it with my adults, to be fair. So, you know, it's just what I prefer.
And we'll definitely talk about that. There's a couple of other things to unpick. One is, so you jockey, as you so Matt Sherratt, so yeah. there wouldn't have been that many international coaches working with the North Midlands age grade at that stage, I wouldn't imagine.
Well, this was before he was an international coach. Yeah. I mean, that North Mids age group, we'd got Andy Short and Matt Kvesic. You know, and Matt Kvesic had literally just started at Warriors Academy. This was North Mids under-17s. And it's one of those, you know yourself, you see a kid and you think, you're going to play for England, mate. Although, in saying that, he was a centre at the time, Matt Kvesic was.
That's probably and good. A good one. Yeah. What did you learn from Matt? What do you remember about him back then? Because, I mean, I'm with you. I think he's a rock star.
He took touch rugby, which I used a lot, especially with the IPGG, because of the different age groups we got in there, and just made so many variations. I mean, I'm the first to put my hand up and admit I'm not that creative. I'm the ultimate thief. You know, I'll gladly nick people's ideas and just put my own little spin on it. And the stuff he was doing, like putting bibs on people and whispering in their ear saying, you can't tackle, and seeing if the attacking team would notice that these people with bibs can't do touches, you know, things like that. I'm thinking, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
That's genius. You know, and he'd number people off, and he'd shout, when I shout a number or an odd number, people have to kneel down and seeing if the attackers could go into that space where the player was out of commission. I'm like, genius. Yeah. Again, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, he'd be a very thoughtful coach, and also because he's, as you said, he's whispering, he's nudging, he wouldn't be that. He wouldn't necessarily be what lots of people think a coach is. And interestingly, from speaking to Matt, he definitely spoke about those up until leading meetings at Bristol and at Ospreys and with Wales. It took him a lot of getting some stuff wrong at kind of North Mids under 17s and School of Rugby stuff, and they'd be huge learning experiences. What did you learn about the backs?
It's not such a mystery as us fat old front rowers think it is. It's basically just rugby, catching, passing, looking for space, and you know, and that's what you coach everywhere, isn't it? You know, it was quite interesting. Look, I had a really good chat with Matt in the clubhouse after, I can't remember what club we were coaching at, but I asked him, I said, well, he said, where did you play? Yeah, I'm short and fat, guess. Yeah. I said, hooker. And he says, wow, he said, there's a lot of front row players coaching in junior rugby. And I said, why do you think that is? Because I'd noticed that, to be fair. Yeah. And there's very backs coaching. And he was quite honest about it. He says, I think people like me are back. We're too intimidated to go and coach a team with forwards in it because they'll think we don't know what they do.
Yeah.
Whereas forwards, you know, is the alpha male syndrome, isn't it? You can pile into any situation and go, right, let's crash into that crash mat and do whatever. And no one bats an eyelid. You know, he said, you flip it the other way and backs are probably a bit more nervous about going to coach forwards. And I thought that was a really astute observation, to be honest, one I hadn't thought of.
Yeah, and also there's some people that used to play backs, but they now look like forwards coaching. But I agree. So often I'll speak to kids and ask about what their practice looks like, and I'll be able to say, look, I'm assuming all your forwards are coaches. All your coaches are forwards. And they'll go, yeah. We've got two props and a second rower, and it's like, so fair play to you. I mean, that one, that would be me. I was really lucky that when I worked in the pathway, I got to coach the backs. I mean, because every day is a learning day then, isn't it? Because it is slightly different, but, you know, it's clearly the same game, but it'll definitely make you think differently about how you design your practices for everyone.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I totally agree with that. I mean, last night we was probably digressing a bit, but we had a bit of a shock defeat on Saturday against Old Eds. Game we expected to win, we didn't win. And I got the lads to debrief it out last night with the video clips, which they did a great job of. They would probably be harder on themselves than I would have been, which is probably, as you know, a little coaching trick anyway. And we got outside, and there was a, how many did we have last night? 16, I think. Colts are training separately because they got a big game on Sunday. I said, what did you think we need to work on from the weekend? And they said, oh, we weren't making good decisions around the rucks. And so we just got a game going that was mixed forwards and backs, just small pitch, small-sided game, just working on the rucks and making decisions about what they wanted to do at the ruck. And I picked the wettest part of the pitch as well, just to simulate last Saturday. and we were trying to recreate little bits that we'd seen in the video that they thought they could have done better, and, you know, trying to identify how they could have put those things right. So, you know, and it wasn't, we didn't separate forwards and backs. It was everybody doing it.
Actually chatting to Victor Vito, which sounds quite big time, on Monday, Tuesday, about this. So he played sevens. He played on the wing in sevens, yeah. But then played row. And just how, which environments has he been in that's integrated forwards and backs the best? And
yeah.
He spent a lot of time in New Zealand where they, I think they would do that pretty well. And I do see it becoming, I think it's getting done better and better. And actually start to see lots of really skillful young forwards. You know, you look at Tom Curry or Nick Aziki or, you know, James Ward. There's some pretty skillful young fellas out there at the moment playing with low numbers.
I've never been bothered by. I mean, I always remember when I was playing. I mean, because I played goalkeeper at football. And
of course you did.
I was a wicket keeper at cricket as well.
Wow.
Yeah, I've all modesty aside, I've got pretty good hands.
Yeah.
And I remember this one practice doing. It was when I was towards the end of my playing career. We were doing this passing drill. Because it was all drills back. It might have been even an Auckland square, I can't remember. Well, I never remember seeing too many squares on a rugby pitch. And I did this. Do you remember the great trifle Bennett scored under the post in the 70s where Steve Fenwick did this brilliant give and take in one move? Well, I did this in this practice, and I remember my coach saying to me, he said, that's great hands, Chapman. He said, but don't you ever do that in a game.
Wow.
I was sort of.
I'm assuming your coach used to play in the forwards.
Oh yeah. I mean, was it two games ago? Because one of our kickers was off. I said to the lads, "Who's a good kicker?" And our Lou said, "Ryan, I didn't know he could kick. He's got a boot like a cannon on him." He was taking our conversions, and the amount of stick I was getting off the touchline for it from the supporters. What are you doing letting the prop take the kicks for? You know, it was going 100 foot in the air, 200 yards down Portway. That's why he's taking the kicks.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, please meet Mr. John Eales.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that I would talk about, definitely you and Ski, is that you're pretty engaged in coach development. So, I know you said earlier that, you know, you noticed there was very few people going on courses. What I actually noticed is very few first team coaches going on courses. So, I mean, A, what, how come you're so engaged? What's the drive? And then I guess B, what have you noticed that's making it harder for other people, or the reasons that other people aren't as engaged?
Well, I think since I was 11, rugby's been a passion, an absolute passion of mine. And I think it's probably the coaching started in the military. As you go through the military, you have to do promotion courses. And the first one I did was going from Lance Corporal to Full Corporal. It's called the Detachment Commander's Course. And yeah, you've got this vision of military courses where it's all shouty and you have to polish your boots. Yeah, there is a bit of that. But one of the, probably one of the best things they ever taught me was how to teach. There's a section in that course called, the Army calls it Method of Instruction. It's basically teaching people how to teach. And for whatever reason, I found out I was quite good at it, which, you know, blew me away, to be honest. You know, they teach you like practical lessons, how, you know, they teach you things like to teach a firearm, how to handle a firearm safely, or how to operate that radio. And then you've got to do academic things like, I don't know, map reading or aircraft recognition or whatever, things like that, academic subjects, which are academic for the military. And it taught you how to do the practical stuff and the classroom stuff. And one of the things I noticed, especially doing my coaching qualifications in rugby, was that not a lot of people knew how to teach. You could see they knew the rugby. And you could see, if you knew rugby, you could see what they were trying to put over. But you could just tell they hadn't got that education in how to put the point across. And I think, I was saying, because skipping that straight away, and because he's a bit more astute than me, he said, these people don't know how to present. And he says, because you know rugby and I know rugby, you know what they're trying to say. And I think maybe in coaching courses, maybe that's something that coach educators could think about. Yeah. It's just not so much getting them to present rugby, but just teach them how to teach. How do you ask a question? You know, military, because the military loves acronyms, there's three P's, pose, pause, pounce. Ask the question, pause, let people let it sink in, and then dive on somebody. You know, the once you get that, you know, the players are on edge because, oh, who's they going to ask? I'm going to have to listen. You know, if you pick someone's name, like you say, Dave, how did that ruck go? You know, everybody else in the room automatically relaxes and stops thinking about how that ruck went. So if you go, how did that ruck go? Everybody's thinking about it because they don't know who you're picking to ask the question. Yeah. And that's just little things like that. And, you know, and there's a lot that's good in the rugby, but it's all rugby centric. And I think a lot of the time it's too rugby centric. And I think maybe there's an argument that you need to get away from that a little bit, maybe broaden what the coach educators do.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I think it's, you know, what are the skills required? So is it like noticing skills? Is it questioning skills? Is it feedback? Is it demonstration? Is it, you know, all of that stuff? And yeah, I think it, I think lots of coach education, lots of NGBs are currently trying to work out where they are in terms of the what and the how. So there'll be a lot of people that, yeah, as you say, would have a huge amount of what in their brains, and there'll be probably a smaller amount of people that would have some of the how stuff in their brains and probably need to, yeah, think about how, yeah, we blend and support people on that. What I mean, and why are first team coaches not that engaged? So from what I hear from RFU, it's a very, very low percentage. What are you noticing? I mean, you obviously play against other teams, you speak to other first team coaches. Do you think that's something that, I mean, what are the reasons?
That's a fair comment. I mean, all of the coaches I talk to, I don't think they do that many courses. I mean, I've only just started the pod journey, and I'm absolutely thoroughly engaged with them. And, you know, when I'm driving my car now, I've got a pod on, and I've got a little post-it note on my dash with a pen stuck on it. And I know you probably shouldn't, don't broadcast this bit, but if I pick up a little nugget on,
you don't do anything, you remember it in your brain, that's what you do.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do, yeah. And by the end of the week, I've got a long list on post-it notes in my brain. I'm thinking, right, how can I assimilate that into what I do? And some I do, some I don't. I mean, I was I was listening to Tony Minicello on, I think it was, Don't tell me the score.
Yeah.
Have you listened to that one?
I haven't, no, but I know he's done
it. Yeah, he was obviously Jess Ennis's coach, and he was talking about doing the basics well over culture. And he was just absolutely brilliant. And everybody at the moment is getting a bit carried away with culture. And that's just behaviour, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you think, and he was saying, if you're doing the basics well, and you get the behaviour right, the culture takes care of itself. I just thought that was a bit of an eye. No, I wrote that one down in my brain, obviously.
In your brain. And if people came and watched or came into your environment at Bees at the moment, what do you hope they would say about the culture?
I'd like to think that they'd say it was pretty open, and I'd also like to think that if any coaches came in, they'd actually say, well, you don't seem to do a lot of coaching. A lot of it's, we've got self... I did a calculation yesterday, actually, because I knew I was coming on here, that I've had the lads for 36 hours since September, which is less than a working week.
Yeah.
So I have fast-tracked a lot of stuff just to try and get us moved on a bit. And one of the things I wanted them to do was to be self-organised, which they're starting to be. And I mean, yesterday, I set the computer up and set the laptop up, and they all mill around the players' room, you know, in the porter cabins, you know, while Rona's giving them massages and taping them up for training and stuff like that. And come 7 o'clock, regardless of who's there or not, because I'm anal about timekeeping, right next door, present away. And I went and sat at the back and I let the lads present away. And then once they'd finished, we had a bit of a chat about it. And then, right, lads, outside, warm yourselves up, let me know when you're ready, and we'll crack on with the session. And for the session, I was wandering around letting them do it because they knew what they wanted to do. But what I tend to do in a session is I won't start with a huddle. I'll just grab them round. If I speak more than 20 seconds, I've failed. This is what we're going to do. This is the aims, crack on, which they did. And then if I'm seeing something, like I say, an individual technique, I'll drag that player out and I'll do, again, I try to keep it down to less than 20 seconds before I chuck him back in again. And then at the end, they like to huddle, so we huddle. And we'll have a quick summary of what we've done and re-emphasise the key points. And that's what they see, you know. This, I like it when Kenny turns up to coach, you know, Kenny Elliman.
Yeah.
But two reasons. One, he's a completely different voice and he coaches completely differently to how I
do. He's really different to you.
Yeah. He's talking all the while. He's in the middle of it. And I love that. It's not what I do. But it completely changes it up and it keeps the lads on the toes.
Yeah. It's when you put it like that, 36 hours in September, I mean, that's 1 week for a premiership club. So
yeah.
they would have had that in a week. It's if ever you wanted to understand the difference between community rugby and the top end of the game, well, there's a pretty incredible statistic.
But on top of that, bear in mind, it's different players every week.
Yeah.
Never put the same team out twice. Never had the same people at training every week. So all of those players would have had less than 36 hours.
Yeah. And how does that influence, like, how you work as coaches and your planning? And because, you know, I rock up in lots of different places. I don't do it longitudinally like you do. But if it's constantly moving feast, what's the implications for you as coaches?
Stay flexible. Massively stay flexible. I mean, that there is. I do plan. Sometimes it's quite detailed. Sometimes it's literally a couple of key points written on the back of my hand. But the amount of times I've got to training and various personnel who needed to be there aren't there, or we've got low numbers, or even we've got too many people than I anticipated, then the plans go straight out the window. And then it's thinking on your feet time, and probably like every coach, you've got a few things you can fall back on that make it seem like you've planned and that you know what you're doing.
Yeah, it would be it would be quite military in that way. So I was definitely going to ask you about how you've changed as a coach, but also the reality of the military, as an example, is that you would have a direction of travel, a plan, but actually you would have and you know, if this happens, then this type of stuff.
Massive.
What's your evolution as a coach look like? So has it always been like that?
Oh, God, no. No. I mean, I've listened to a lot of pods, and I'm laughing whenever whoever's on the pod, whichever pod it is, gets asked that question, because they all say the same. It's lots of cones, lots of tackle shields, lots of tell. And I understand that. And as I think you get more experienced, the amount of equipment you use reduces. Probably the amount of things you're saying reduces.
Yeah.
And probably the more the players talk increase. And, you know, last night I probably did 5 to 10% of the talking the whole evening. And the lads were doing all the rest of it, which I think is it should be. And it's funny you should say, I think I told you this, didn't I, that I got a bit of a telling off one of the supporters at the home game, the ones that stood behind me. And I said, why aren't you telling them what to do? Why aren't you shouting at them? You know, it was an old boy, so, you know, different times, you know, different people. And I turned around and I said, well, two reasons. I said, one, they wouldn't listen to me because they're in the middle of a game. I says, and if I'm telling them what to do, that's a decision they're not making. And we want to have decision-making rugby players. And he looked at me and he goes, oh, I hadn't thought of it like that, and wandered off to get another beer, which is fair enough. You know, every decision you make for a player is one you're not letting him make. And that's, you know, that's sort of one of the things I live by.
Yeah, and there'd be some traditions in sport. And you've just heard me on the end of a call there where it's a hockey coach and a couple of the girls in their team, and they're quite a high up team, had said, you know, we can't believe you didn't give us a bollocking at half time. And they were like, A, where did the word bollocking come from? And B, this has never happened before. But so where's this expectation come from? And what might be the other solutions to it? So I always talk about like my coaching gremlin. So my coaching gremlin is that is organized Ollie. So organized Ollie is, you know, when I see people putting multiple cones along an already straight line, it agitates me. Well, what's your coaching gremlin?
Seeing kids standing in queues, yeah, waiting to hit tackle shields.
Oh, mate. Ugh.
Yeah. It's an itch I can't scratch, and I have to wander off. I'm like, my lad plays at Old Ales. And he's got a really good coaching group, and their lead coach Ollie, he's quite a modern, forward-thinking coach, you know, and I'm really pleased that he's coaching my lad. And he's asked me to sort of overview matches and their practices, just as a outside eye, if you like. I have no intention of coaching my lad. I don't think that's.
I was going to ask you that. Why?
Well, it goes back to booze again. One of the things we used to do was the age group coaches would ask me and Ski to go around and run sessions for them, which is great. You know, it's great. Different voice and all that sort of stuff. I don't know what we were adding per se, but one of the main things was they'd say, my lad won't listen to me.
Yeah.
And it's a point of conflict. And so one of the things I'd say was, what were you doing when he wasn't, what did you want him to do that he didn't want to do? And they'd say, oh, I don't know, run that line, hold the ball in 2 hands, something, you know, a rugby technique. And so I'd say, how were you coaching it? And he'd describe it. So, right, I will go and do exactly the same thing at the session next week. So I'd do the same as he did the week before. And the lad would go, oh, yeah, that's a good idea, isn't it?
I need you to come and hang with my son.
Yeah.
He needs a bit of Clive in his life. He doesn't listen to
dad. And I thought, my lad was just starting to play then, starting to show an interest. And I thought, I don't want that relationship with my son.
Yeah. True.
I want rugby to be his, because I've had a great, you know, I've got so much to thank the game for. I want that for him. And I don't want to be that dad in his ear, because I've played a bit and coached a bit. And it's, you know, I'll have a conversation with him in the car on the way home. And I'll say, do you enjoy that, mate? And he goes, yeah. One word answer, because he's 13. I say, you're coming back next week? And he'll go, yeah. And we'll only talk rugby if he initiates it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. It's his. It's not mine. I'll stand there and cheer and,
yeah, you know, and all that. I suspect 95% of Sunday morning mums and dads are coaching their own kids. I think it gets, especially around the ages we're talking about, so under 13s, under 14s, it gets quite, it can get quite sticky.
Yeah, I mean, Ollie coaches his lad, Cal, and Cal's a quite handy player. But, you know, I've seen conflict there between the two of them. I wouldn't want that between me and Dan. I mean, we've got enough to argue about at home. I don't want to bring rugby into it.
And how, so now you're coaching the first team. Lots of the lads will have come through the minis and juniors, which is class.
Yeah.
What's the couple of questions, really? How have you facilitated that? So I'm going back to your school days. One solution is that the Colts train with the first team. I actually don't see that much, but as you probably experienced, that might have been quite dangerous. And then, so what's the demographic of the first team look like now? And then how have you helped that kind of, because that would be a real problem for a lot of clubs, is actually kids get to 16, 17, 18, 19, and then that transition and other stuff going on in their lives. What type of things have you done?
Well, first off, I had a chat with, the minute Lou asked me to come back, which I wasn't expecting, by the way.
Lou Lopoli, the Welsh, the King of Wales.
Lou Lopoli, not Di. And he asked me to come back, and I wasn't, it was something I had to think about, because, you know, as far as I was concerned, my coaching career was over. I chatted with the wife, and it's that whole thing, isn't it, Rusty? You know, you always regret the things you don't do rather than the things you do do. And I thought, well, I've got to do this. And we had no senior players, not one. All of the semi-pro lads had gone. The previous senior coaching team had gone. So there was literally zero senior content at that club, apart from me and Lou. Lou put out a recruiting call, and we did what I call a come and join us day. And we organised a touch rugby tournament with beer and a barbie afterwards, which was great. And we ended up with something like 33 senior players from that, a lot of which were ex-mini and juniors who'd come back to the club. There was some lads who were at other local clubs who thought, you know what, I fancy coming to Bees, because, you know, whether you like it or not, Bees is a big name. You know, ex-championship club, beat Wasps. We had that on in the clubhouse the other day, actually, that game on DVD. Showing some of the younger lads, you know, this is what you've joined. This is the club's history.
Nice.
And we, obviously, there was an existing cult set up. One of the first things I did was go to the cult, Ian and Steve, and say, mate, we need to train together, because they're the future of the club. And that's a challenge in itself, because obviously there's safeguarding issues, which is, I think, once you get to cults, is a bit ridiculous, because a lot of the cults are bigger than my seniors. But you have to obey the rules, because, you know, no one likes filling in forms less than me. So we have touch rugby sessions with the cults. And while that's rugby, I think the biggest thing is building relationships. The cults are getting to know the senior players. So when they do qualify to play senior rugby, they know the lads. It's not such a big thing coming from an environment where they're really familiar with, into an environment they're not familiar with. All of the cults and all the senior rugby players at Bees now know each other and their mates. You know, the cults go and play on Sundays, and the lads who have qualified through age to play senior rugby have got the choice to play senior rugby or cults, and no one's pressuring them to do either. You know, there's a lot of age qualified lads really, really want to play senior rugby, and they're up for it. And, you know, I think I was telling you, wasn't I, Sarah's lad, Adam, he played his first senior rugby. And the first thing he did was get a bladder on the head. His face was covered in blood, and he was loving it. Look, my hands were that cold that day. I couldn't take a photo, because if I'd have showed it his mum, she'd have gone, you're not playing rugby anymore, Adam.
So Sarah Gaffney, who's done loads of cool stuff for the club as well. And by the way, I should have called Lula Polly, the king of Italy. When I saw her the other day, she was really excited, because he was excited that he played his first senior game and he'd got an injury, and it was like everything his dreams are made of, quite frankly.
Oh, so, first game of senior rugby, stitches, mate.
I was exactly the same as me. I got stitches on my first ever game of senior rugby. And the good thing was, so back then at Stockton, on the away game, if you went back on the bus, you had to go back under the bus. And so, fortunately for me, I had to spend a night, because I think I had a bang of the head as well, in a hospital in Carlisle. So, which I would have preferred to do than going back from Carlisle to Stockton under a bus.
That's brilliant.
I'm connected to you, so you and the Colts coaches, obviously, that's another thing that I see is that first team coaches and Colts coaches don't chat, they don't go into each other's environments. You guys would be pretty strongly connected, I would imagine.
Oh, massively, yeah. I mean, it's one of the things, obviously, the Colts as a squad have got their own ambitions this year. You know, they're in a league, they're in a cup, and they want to win those, which is great. So, a lot of the talk about is who's got the most important game that weekend. You know, there's no pressure on either setup, seniors or Colts, to supply players. You know, it's all depending on who thinks their game is the most important. I mean, our last league game, not this weekend, the weekend before, we got a lot of actual seniors out because of, you know, because they have lives. And I spoke to the Colts, said we could do with some support that game, and all the age grades lads who were qualified, you know, Steve and Ian sent them over to us. So, that, you know, there's a lot of cooperation there. And it's the only way forward. You know, you can't have a Colts and the senior section operating in isolation. You can't. You've got to build those relationships. You've got to get the players knowing each other. And you've got to have those conversations with the coaches. You know, purely, I think, just so the players aren't scared to make that transition to senior rugby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know what it was like for me going from Colts to seniors. It was intimidating. Massively intimidating, and you know, I always say Colts were the best years of my rugby life. I loved it. You know, it's probably some of the most enjoyable rugby I had playing Colts. I enjoyed my senior rugby. If you had to pin me down and which bits I enjoyed most out of my playing days, it would have been Colts. And you know, and I think there's a lot of that going on. They're having a great time. They're a tight bunch of lads, and they've got great coaches. But you know, at some point they're going to want to make that transition. We've got to make it as easy for them as possible, especially as it's such a dropout age as well.
Yeah, and as you said, they have lives. So in terms of, you know, some weeks you'll have some players, you won't have them other weeks. What's the, have you found that around, someone asked a question around like, around motivation and training and how many nights, are you two nights a week? Do you think one night a week where they're coming, everyone's there is a better solution? What's the stuff you've played around with there?
Yeah, I think Beans, as we were a completely new organisation, I didn't know what their preferences were. So that the first time we had all the senior players and the Colts were in that meeting as well, we sort of, you know, wanted one of your famous values meetings. It was one of those kind of things. And I asked the question, I said, I mean, my preference would have been training two nights a week because I'm rugby barmy.
You get away from the missus.
Yeah, and it's like one of the things I've had to fight throughout my career is that I don't understand why people aren't as mad about rugby as I am. I just don't get it. You know what I mean, they want to play rugby, so why aren't they absolutely enthused and made up? And it's the thing they think about when they wake up, and the last thing they think about when they go to sleep, like I do. You know, so I've had to fight that all through my life. So the first thing I said, "How often do you want to train, lads?" And the majority vote was once a week. So was that my preference? No, but they're the players. I would sooner have one quality session a week than two dodgy bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And also the thing you got to remember, especially probably my position's a bit unique in the fact that we're in a rebuilding stage. You've got to keep these lads happy and you've got to keep them.
Yeah.
If you start pissing them off and putting too much pressure on them, they're going to walk. And even though we've got quite a big playing squad now, we can't afford to lose people. We want to get people in. So everything I do, the first thing I'm thinking is, am I going to piss people off? You know, because we want to keep them. Maybe the coach that comes after me, when everything's all established and carving stone, maybe he can start, well, do you know what? We need to do this, whether you like it or not. But we're not at that stage yet. And some of the more experienced players, I know it annoys. It's like our half game rule for the adults. We have a half game rule in league games. And I got told quite forcefully in the last game, which we lost against Eds, by one of the senior players that the substitutions were killing us. You know, and I went, mate, we've agreed to it. It's part of our values for this season. Suck it up and get on with it.
Yeah, my fair play. There'd be a lot of teams where there's kids or grown-ups who would wish there was a half-game rule. Freddie Burns joked about it at BAFT, didn't he, on Twitter? He said, oh, hopefully one day they'll bring in the half-game rule in the Prem and I won't get 7 minutes every week.
See, again, the half-game rule's there because you've got to keep them interested. And I, there was something on Twitter this week, wasn't there? There was this mum wrote a really heartfelt letter that was quite poignant about, you know, how a son is falling out of love with the game because he doesn't get to play.
Yeah.
He goes every week, he's keen as mustard, you know, and he runs the water on as good as gold, and the coach never plays him. And, you know, and didn't she say that she asked him, he said, oh, he might get a bit of a game next week. He, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, just what? You know, if I can do it for adults in, okay, it's only the Greater Birmingham Merit League, it's not bloody Premiership, but if I can do it for adults in a proper league, why can't other coaches do it? I just don't understand it. And it's you know, your job's not on the line. You know, you're not going to lose your job if you lose the game. And oh, I just don't get it. It's something I never will, to be honest.
Yeah, what's been your best bits? So what's been the kind of highlights of the last kind of 12 months?
Seeing some of the lads I'd coached at Mini and Juniors come back, and some of them I didn't recognise because they turned from boys into men. You know, one of the lads who came, all right, Clive, how you doing? Oh, I used to love your APDG sessions. I'm looking at him going, oh, God, what's his name? I didn't even recognise him. It changed that much. You know, and I thought that was pretty good. And he said to me, so you don't remember me, do you? I said, if you was in the APDG, I remember you. I just don't remember your name. And he was killing himself laughing. You know, he'd gone from, I think, as he said, something like a 5 foot 13-year-old to something, you know, something like a 6 foot bearded monster. I don't think it was my fault, to be fair. And yeah, and the ones, like I said before, he's back in the semi-pro days, seeing some of the lads that have come through actually playing first team rugby. And you know as well as I do how hard it is for mini and juniors to come through into that environment. You know, just seeing that little bit of success, you know, seeing the likes of Will Ralph and Danny Kelly, people like that playing, you know, and Danny's played for Rotherham, he's played against Leinster in one of the competitions there. And, wow. You know, young Ben Phillips is down at London Welsh, you know, which is absolutely fantastic, playing semi-pro rugby. And, you know, it's that kind of thing, you know, when they put it on Twitter, you know, I always answer them, well done, Benny, or Dan, well done, you know. And, you know, and they always answer me back, which is lovely. You know, that's what we want to see, isn't it? You know, you build those relationships. You try your hardest for them when they're kids. And when you see them succeed, it's absolutely brilliant. It's almost like they're your own kids.
Yeah, you'd be the, you're the cool, you must be the coolest granddad on Twitter.
Mike wins, there's nothing cool about it. Fine move.
I remember Will Ralph as well, so he was mega, mega keen, wasn't he? Like, always asking, what can I do? How can I get better? What type of... Yeah. That's always... It's pretty cool, the stuff like that.
Yeah, he's a good lad, Will. Yeah, he suffered a bit with concussion, so I don't think he's playing anymore, unfortunately. But he always... If you remember right, he's probably one of the most talented rugby players you ever saw, but couldn't put an ounce of weight on. Bless him.
Where are you currently getting your learning from at the moment? Have you been, what have you been up to? Anything cool?
Pods, reading, courses, I can get on them. What's the last one I did? It's one of the things we do as well is chat with, one of the big things is I make a point of doing is talking to first team coaches when of a Saturday after the game. You know, how are you coping with training? What do you do? And just that kind of thing. It's like, you know, I've written a couple of things down here. you know, while we've been talking. I think while there's set coaching courses are great, I think, did I see it on Twitter? Did somebody suggest, why don't you just organise an evening where a load of coaches just get round the table and just chat?
Community of practice.
Did I dream that? Did I see that?
It would be a big thing in hockey, just getting people together from, not even necessarily from rugby, so you could have some coaches from other sports, because everyone has similar problems.
Oh, massively, yeah. Yeah, it's one of the things you hear, you know, is one of the common ones was, we haven't had many training last night. You know, and it's amateur rugby.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody's as keen as you are, as I've found out over the last 30 years.
Who's influenced you? Which coaches have influenced you along the way?
Oh, Matt Sherritt. As you know, I love a scrum.
Fergie, let me guess, Fergie.
Oh, massively, and Smithy, yeah.
Yeah, tell me about Fergie. Fergie coached North Mids as well.
Yeah, yeah, that was where I met him.
So Matt Ferguson, Northampton Saints scrum coach.
He was telling me, we was on a, I can't remember where we were, he was on a course somewhere, and he was telling me, he was at Cardiff Blues, wasn't he?
Yeah, Bristol, Cardiff Blues, Saints.
Yeah, when he was there, he was telling me a story about how a lot of the players were surprised that he wanted to get to know them. You know, the first thing he did with them was take them out for a coffee. You know, and he said all of these highly gnarled, experienced players were looking at him going, what's all this about then? Why do you want to take me for a coffee sort of thing? You know, and that, you know, that's... You sort of vocalise something. I've always thought you've got to get to know your players. Absolutely, you've got to get to know your players as people. There's no two of them think the same way or react the same way. And I don't coach probably, because I don't coach groups, I coach individuals while we're doing sessions. And I don't talk to two players the same, you know, because I've got to know them. Some I'm still getting to know, so I'm still a bit, how do I approach this guy?
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, again, I'll take you back to the 36 hours. I can't, you know, and I'm very aware. I've got a little list of lads who I think I haven't spent enough time with. So, you know, I'll try and get around those guys. You know, because there's obviously there's the quiet ones in the group who don't say much. So I've got my list of quiet ones who I'll try and tick one off a week. Just go and have a chat with him about whatever.
Yeah.
You know, what you've been doing this week. You know, where... Missed you last week. Were you homework or work or something? You know, just try and find out something about them and what makes them tick.
Nice. While Kenny's organising the session, you could be having a little discussion with them.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you can't get a word in when Kenny's there. Which is brilliant. I love Kenny. There was one thing I meant to mention. You probably wouldn't remember this. And it goes back to the no one's as keen as you are about rugby. It was a Midlands coaching conference at Warwick University. You presented.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember, you stood up. And I think you were the first one on in the morning. And
does this end well for me, by the way?
Is this what?
Does this story end well for me?
Yes, it does, mate. It does, but it sort of got me thinking. You sort of put me on the path of, well, no one's as keen on rugby as me. And that was, you asked everybody, you said, how many people here have given up family time for rugby? Do you remember that thing that you did?
I can't remember. Tell me more.
You said, how many people here have given up family time for rugby? And virtually the whole room put their hand up. Then you said, how many people have sacked off work for rugby? You know, most of the people in the room put their hand up. And you said, how many times have you sacked other stuff, important stuff off in your life for rugby? And, you know, most people put their hands up. And you said, do you know why you do that? And I knew the answer straight away. And you went, yeah, because you love it.
Yeah, we do love it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that stuck with me. You know, it's just, you know, silly things that stick with you. And I thought, why do I love it? Because I do. You know, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, one day those kids will love it as much as you. Mate, I've got a few one-liners for you. coaching under sevens.
Chaos.
Cool. So I only put that in because you said you haven't coached below under 14s, and you really
I've stood on the sideline with an under seven son and I've seen it.
Seen grown men and women dying trying to hurt cats.
Yeah.
I'd take my hat off to those people. Ski.
Mice.
Lulapoli.
Legend.
Bees.
Family.
Coaching.
Passion.
Rugby.
Oh, that'd be passion again. Can I have two passions?
Double passion, mate. Always, always. Jockey.
Oh, so inspirational.
Mate, you are fanboy for jockey. I'm going to send I'm sending this pod later to him. Poor way.
Home.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say showers. Best showers in the world, poor way.
Oh, you just told me plenty about your shower stories, mate.
A lot of planning and reflecting gone on in those showers. Mate, it's been a pleasure. Been a real good insight, hopefully, for lots of people into kind of the world of Colts and community rugby and coaching and all the stuff that goes on and goes into it. Where can people find you? You're on Twitter, aren't you?
Yeah, I've written this down because I never know what it is.
And you would have written it down.
Clive underscore chap on Twitter.
Nice.
And Instagram, cchapman64.
Mate, you're on Instagram. You'll be on like TikTok next or Snapchat.
I've heard of Snapchat. What's TikTok?
I don't know, but I have heard of it as well. Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Keep up the great work.
Brilliant talking to you, Rusty. Cool. Yeah, absolutely. Cheers, bud.